Hello and welcome, and thanks for joining me on this first episode of this podcast. My name is Lisa, and this is a place where I want to talk about collecting vinyl and music in general with other collectors from around the world. My first guest is Mio, alias Mio Newell from Sweden. With 42,000 followers, she has one of the most visible and known accounts in the vinyl community on Instagram. And that for a good reason, then. Besides doing posts in which she shares her top 10 lists for artists like Black Sabbath or Radiohead, which by the way had a lot of first places and only one second, or post about her favourite albums from cities like Manchester or Berlin, she is without a doubt most known because she doesn't simply photograph or shares her vinyl collection ranging from classics through all the decades and music styles, but is literally becoming part of the record. With help of makeup and props, she turns herself into album covers of classics and personal favourites, and with that, in my opinion, has almost created a new art form. I don't know what it's called yet, but maybe we can find that out together. Joining me live from Sweden now, welcome Mio. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. That's a very nice write-up. I feel very, very honored.
That was kind of my intention.
Yeah, I'm really bad at taking compliments. I get very easily embarrassed. But you never say that about yourself.
Yeah, and it sounds kind of... I mean, if you put it in a text and you put all that together, it just sounds like a lot of accomplishment, which you have. I mean, that's what I want to talk about on Instagram, where, you know, you're most visible. That it's one of the most interesting accounts. And I think I'm speaking for a lot of people. One that pops up you want to follow because you never know what's the next thing that you're going to come up with. And I'm still amazed on all the things you're coming up with.
Oh, that's very nice.
But start at the beginning. I mean, before you get the mindset of turning yourself into album covers, how did you get into music or in that intensity to make it a lifelong obsession?
I've been told by my mother that it started before I can remember anything. And it's also kind of weird because I don't come from a music family. My family isn't interested in music in any way. My sister, who is 20 years older, she hung around a lot of musicians, but she didn't practice music and she didn't listen to a lot of music. So, but my mother says that as soon as I could stand up, I was completely amazed by Prince. That's my first musical love affair, if you will. And that was Diamonds and Pearls, the music video for Diamonds and Pearls. So that's the first thing I've been told. And so ever since then, I had this very, very strong connection with music that I know a lot of people feel. And I think everyone is capable of feeling. But for me, it's just as important. It sounds so cliche, but it's just as important as water or sleep or food. For me, it's a way to just keep my sanity. It's a way for just kind of a meditation or a place to get some comfort from. And it's been that way for as long as I can remember. I can't say where it comes from. It's just something that I was born with, a passion and a big interest in just music in general.
Prince is a pretty, you know, profound and cool way. I remember being told that I was fascinated by the Take That video. So that's not, I mean, I've worked from there.
Yeah, when I was old enough to discover music for myself, it was of course bands like Spice Girls and Aqua and things like that. But when I was a kid and reacting just to the sounds and everything, just pure out of, I don't know, like almost a primal instinct, Prince was my first musical love. So that's where it started, and then it's been like a roller coaster of different genres and periods and eras and everything, but that's where it started, I think.
And it's an interesting, like you said, that roller coaster, you know, that brings you to different eras in your life where you're just listening to like, you know, maybe in your early teens it's pop, but then I've read about and we share this love of Elliott Smith.
Yeah,
that's probably, you know, changed a lot of, and that's so deep in, you know, founded in me that I can listen to him for, I mean, maybe a year not, and then I'm coming back to his records and it has the same effect. And you sometimes don't want to listen to it because you worry that it doesn't, you know, it's gonna fade or something, but it never does.
But I think a lot of kids and in me too, and probably you also, that phase where you listen to that pop on the radio phase, that easy, accessible kind of music is really important, because that's just exposure to music is important, even if it's not that most high quality or anything. But when I started to choose artists for myself, like finding out my true musical taste, Elliott Smith was my first artist that I discovered that way. And
do you remember how you discovered him?
Oh, no, it was probably in an illegal way through the internet. And I can't really remember, but I know I was like 13, maybe 12, 13.
Yeah.
And I just stumbled upon it. And maybe it was because I watched a lot of MTV, like from when I was maybe 6 or 7 up to when I was in my mid-teens. I just sneak up at night and watch a lot of MTV, and that way I discovered bands like Radiohead and Massive Attack and Nine Inch Nails. And I think I discovered Elliott Smith by, you know, looking up those artists and figuring out what they liked. So it was probably that way I found something like that.
That's also always a great, or some of my favorite things about music in general, that, you know, it's sort of this network of things that's not, they're all connected somewhere. And you know, you could, like, I don't know, I'm just remembering like a Fleet Fox interview with Robin Peckold, and he talked about his love for Elliott Smith, and it sort of, you know, it's sort of always, or even like post Malone, if we want to go there, his favorite band is Fleet Foxes, and you would never guess that in a way.
Yeah.
But it's this sort of, you know, like Arctic Monkeys, that are like taking so much influence from other things, and you discover stuff through that.
I've always been fascinated or interested in the source of things. So if I like a band, I want to figure out where they get their inspiration, or what genres they are inspired by, and what's the beginning of that genre, and what I can find there, and what, because a lot of the times, or always, the beginning, or the mother of all music, or the first band that they listen to, that pure genre is often great. It's often amazing when you find, like when I discovered Graceland. It's such a cliche to say that, but when I discovered Paul Simon's Graceland, and looking into Afrobeat and all that, and finding all these great artists that way, and then falling in love with that genre and those artists. It's I like that part of discovering music, going back.
Yeah, me too, absolutely. Which probably brings us to that loving of music, and that discovering of music, and that appreciation of music. Did that sort of bring you to working in a record store? I mean, if you follow your Instagram account, we can see just sort of little glimpses of your day-to-day life, which is working in a record store.
How I ended up there?
Yeah. Is that something that sort of obsession in your teens, that sort of, was it a dream always working in a record store, or did it just, you know, happen?
I want to say that it was, but it never was. I just happened to be there. The right place.
And they looked for employees,
no,
and
no.
You said, yeah, mom, me.
It wasn't that way either. I fought my way to stay there, but I was, so I, you should stay in school, but I didn't. At 17, or 16, around that time, I decided to go to Oslo and tour with bands instead. So I spent a couple of years touring with different bands, and both playing instruments myself, or just hanging around bands or selling merch and things like that. And I did that for a couple of years. And then my past caught up to me, and I hit a brick wall, and I got completely burned out. So I became got assigned to this EU project for young adults who needs help getting out to getting work again. So I needed an internship, and my friend had an internship at this record store. So he said, yeah, it's they usually take people in, and you can stay for a couple of weeks, and then you have to find something else. But it was a fast way to get an internship. So I applied, and they said, oh, we have another one coming in 3 weeks. So you have 3 weeks to stay here, and then you have to go. And I don't know, that urged me to try to I don't know, it kind of, I'm a challenged-based person. I love a good challenge, so I just work my ass off.
You said, I'm going to be the best player you ever had.
You say I have 3 weeks, and then there is another guy coming in, and he's going to be here for an internship for a year, and you have 3 weeks, and he has a year. And I was like, I'm going to get that year. I'm going to be there for a year. And then I was there for 3 weeks, and the other guy didn't show up. So they just renewed my internship for a couple of weeks. And then I think I stay there as an intern for 4 months. And then I got the job. So ever since then, I've been working there.
And is it, you know, for a lot of people, that's probably a dream job, or like for a lot of people, like open up their own record stores, or who's collecting vinyl? Is it that dream job? Is it that you're spending all your day listening to music and... You know.
I think I listen to as much music at work as people do who don't have to talk to other people. Like we always have music in the background, and it's not always music you enjoy, because you have colleagues who wants to choose the music too, and they don't always like the same things. So it's not like that. I'd say, because I've been working at other places, in retail and other places, a retail job is just a retail job in the end. But it's of course very, very nice if you're working with a product that you love and enjoy and are feeling passionate about. But I would say like it's one maybe in 10 people who comes in to buy something that are interested in the product, if you will. Most people just, it's like working in a clothing store. You're just there to buy a sweatshirt, and you want a black one, and that's all you want, and then you go in and out. There's few people who come in to talk about fashion, and it's the same in a record store. It's very few people who come in that want to talk about music, or are just like, I don't know what to get, please recommend something. It's a very small amount of people who do that. But when they come in and you get to have that exchange, that gives you... energy for the rest of the day that I assume you don't get if you work with something you maybe don't like as much.
Yeah, and it's always, I mean, I work in sort of like a record section of like a store, and it's sometimes it's like giving a new home to a lonely record if you can like recommend something that they didn't know. And I feel like that. Like, you know, it's going to be played to the record, and it's going to be taken care of, and it doesn't, you know, stand around in this, you know, shop anymore. And but yeah, like you said, it gives you energy, and it's a wonderful feeling, basically.
Yeah, you have these days like around Christmas, of course, and then you have Record Store Day, and you have Black Friday, where the majority of people who come in are those kind of people who want to talk about pressings and quality and what variants are available and that kind of thing. And those days give you like such a massive amount of energy for the rest of the year, where you just are selling maybe, I can't even think of a boring artist now, but when you just are selling CDs or something for hours on end.
You mentioned Record Store Day, and you've been one of the people responsible for the Record Store Day in Sweden, is that right?
No, kind of. The people who own the store I work at, two very nice guys, they are the curators of Record Store Day in Sweden. And we are a pretty small company, so we have been working for a couple of some years. I've been working really close with them, like, and with my other colleagues, and then other years. Like next year, I won't be working with them as close because I'm focusing on other things. But we have been curious, I don't know how long, but maybe 4 years, 3 years, our store have been responsible for Record Store Day in Sweden. Then, because the interest wasn't that big and no one else wanted to take it on. So someone...
Seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably like a nightmare to organize.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot, and we are the biggest records. We are not a chain of stores, but we are the still the biggest record store record retailers in Sweden. So I don't know. It's kind of a natural progression that we took over that part, I think. And it's nice that it's not run by labels also. So it's kind of more natural than if a big label were to run it instead.
We're, you know, talking about record stores, and I've asked a friend of mine who's working in a record store, and he found it funny that we are talking to each other as women.
Mm.
Because it is perceived, you know, collecting vinyl or just basically being interested in music in that kind of way is sort of like a male thing. And I've worked in a record store that's part record store, part bookstore, and you could observe couples, in that case, women and men, parting ways, like men going into the music section and women going, oh, I'm going to browse the book section. Can you see a change in the last 5 or 10 years that it is changing and that, you know, more women are interested in vinyl?
I can see a change that I think it's not only in vinyl, but in all niched interest there, where women are more interested in talking, and more interested in talking about their passion. When I started working at the store, which is almost nine, I just started my 9th year there. So when I started there, I noticed that the women who came in, just came in, picked the record they wanted, bought it, and then left. And the men who came in, I'm generalizing here violently, but they usually, maybe they came in, they browsed a bit, they wanted to talk to us about the record, they wanted to talk about with the other customers about the record, they wanted to, you know, get into it a little bit deeper, whereas the women just came in and bought what they wanted, and then they left, and then I don't know if they talked about the music with their friends, but I think the change is that more women are coming in and is not afraid to take that place. They're not afraid to demand some space and not afraid to take up talk about their passions, I think. But I also think if we see more women practicing their hobbies or their passion, expressing their passion, more women will come out and do the same, or more people who identify as women, at least.
Yeah, and I think you can see it on, you know, bring it back to Instagram. There are a lot of women collecting vinyl and sharing it. And I find that because all my friends who like collect vinyl are male, you know, I'm the odd one out in that. And I find it great and I find it inspiring in that way. Not to sound cliched, but what you just said exactly, that it is inspiring in that way. And just, you know, not being alone in that.
Yeah, and also that we are a new and nuanced group of people. When I started my account, which is almost 2 years ago, it was very, very polarized. So there were the women behind accounts where it was only pictures of records, and maybe they wrote a little bit about it. And then there were the accounts where there are mostly run by males, but also women with not a lot of clothing, like more sexualized accounts, and then there wasn't anything in between. There weren't any nuances, any like just there was those two accounts, and then were very, very big amounts of male accounts that did all kinds of stuff. But now I see accounts doing everything from, you know, writing full reviews and appearing in the picture and not appearing in the picture, and doing the reviews of CDs and vinyl and 7 inches and everything. There are more nuanced group being visible on Instagram, at least now. And I think that it's the exact same thing in the record stores and all over the world.
Yeah, and I think it's bold to put yourself out there, because that's like, you know, a whole different topic. But the internet and, you know, the anonymity of it, that people are just going to comment something. I find it always really, your way you talk. I mean, you can see that under your posts, even though some really sexualized comments sometimes, and you just you answer them mostly with humor, and, you know, taking out their aggression with that, and I found it really amazing. I probably couldn't do it.
It's once again, it's 9 years of practice, so maybe it took me for 4 or 5 years of just being exposed to it at the store, because it's the same climate in real life. People say it's trolls on the internet. No, it's not trolls on the internet. It's the exact same thing in real life when you're working in a record store, at least. But you get the exact same comments and the exact same exposure. People aren't afraid to tell you to your face these exact things. So I've been practicing, and I have bad days and good days. But now I just know that the best way to respond to this is just make them look ridiculous, because that's what it is. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and kill with kindness. Yeah. That's my way in sort of, yeah, I've people like just ignoring me.
Oh. Every
and
day. Going
to male colleagues and thinking they know better, and then the male colleagues turn to me and ask me, and I know the answer right away. And it's a great feeling when you look at their faces in the way that, but yeah, that's, you know, cliches and preconceptions, really, that's their problem, but not mine in a way.
Yeah.
And I think just what you said, I think if there's more representation that women, you know just as much about vinyl and music, that maybe will change, not maybe in their generation, because I think these are set in stone, but like in our generation.
Yeah, I don't work as much in the register now as I did before, but when I worked at the register full time, I started having this little book by my side, because I felt like at the time I only had male colleagues. Now it's 50-50, but at the time I was the only, for a very long time, I was the only female working there. And I felt like, I was being dramatic. I felt like, but it can't be an everyday thing that I'm being discriminated against. It can't be an everyday thing. It must be that it happens sometimes, and then it just stays in my head and I obsess over it. That was what I thought. So I started writing down everything, like from the smallest things, like someone comes in and just ignores me, to people just saying up front the nastiest thing or the worst thing, or kind things that are, you know, maybe not the kindest thing, but I wrote it all down, and I came to the conclusion that it's about 3 times a day that it's obviously I'm being differently treated because I'm being because I look female, and that slowly tears you down after a while. Of course, it takes on my confidence and my general. It just makes feel bad after a while. You start questioning things if you are less worthy and everything. But it happens a lot. It happens, and it still happens. But I'm both older now, and I'm a little bit hardened.
I envy you for that, because I'm still getting just frustrated. And all my colleagues have to hear it afterwards that I'm, you know, maybe I'm dramatic. And you apologize for it and say, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm sort of annoying you with the same story over and over. And sometimes standing beside it and saying, what was that? And I'm saying, yeah, welcome to my world.
But the most important thing is that you have good colleagues. And I'm fortunate to have great colleagues. So the staff have been somewhat changed since then, and we are a very tight group working now who have our backs, and we are a lot of times just women in the store, which makes people, they have to talk to us. They don't have and it's nice.
They don't have a choice.
And it's also nice to see that it doesn't matter how femme you look. You can look like, it doesn't mean if you, it doesn't matter if you're androgynous or if you look like me, who obviously is very into makeup and the way I look and everything. It doesn't matter. As long as you have an ounce of femininity to it, you will be discriminated against. And it's nice to know that it doesn't matter. it's all of us.
That you may be changing. Yeah, that you're changing an opinion, you know, maybe one customer at a time, or just in one experience. I mean, no one's going out there and saying, oh, well, maybe I was wrong. But just like little steps of like experiences of experiences.
And it's also nice to know that it's not an age thing also. We have very young people working there. We have a lot of older people working there, and it doesn't matter. It just matters whether or not we are women. And then we can work together as a group. So,
did you ever thought of publishing that book of stories?
maybe. I found once, I googled like record store stories. There is a blog that they don't write any stories any longer, but they have written a couple of ones, like 10 or something. And I think it's an American thing, American blog. And the funny thing is, it's exactly the same where I work. It's all over the world, the exact same thing. And after visiting so many record stores in Europe while I was on tour and things like that, I realized that I'm not only the female staff at store being treated the same way, I, as a customer who's a woman, will be treated the same way everywhere in the world, except maybe Germany. But everywhere else, I think it's the same. I'm being ignored.
Oh, Germany is better than... I mean, I'm just interested because I am in Germany right now, and that's a different experience for you.
Yeah, you don't feel this... Yeah, for me, it's a different experience. I feel like I'm just a customer there.
Just thinking about it while you said it, that I don't think I've ever... You know, there was no condescending or something that's like, oh, well, what you're picking up for anybody else or something. But yeah, just the same. Yeah, I just felt like a customer, right?
Yeah, and I just think when you enter a store in Sweden, it's not the same way. But I'm not going to name countries, but there are a couple of countries where you think, well, this is a very this country is a has come a long way in their, I don't know, view of women and people of other color. But then you go into record store and you dig and you see that they have special sections for women and they have special section for people that are just a different color of skin than you, and it doesn't matter what genre they are practicing, they are just in that position. And the worst record store I've been to, which I'm not going to name, but I was furious when they treated me like absolute shit. And I came in and they have a section, all female musicians aside, and everyone who's not white were just put to the side in the back of the store. And then they had the male section with rock and everything. And then they had put notes on musicians where they thought they were silly or sissy or like a pussy. And on Kurt Weill, they had put in parentheses. So it said, could Kurt Weill, and then in parentheses said, he's really a woman. So you would know that he is really, what yeah. and that was, yeah, it was a really shitty record store. And it was in a country that most people will have a preconception of what country this is. It's not that country. It's a very forward-thinking country. And the record stores showed that maybe the people aren't that forward-thinking. But in Germany, I don't feel like that. I love Germany, so maybe I'm partial to that, but I feel like when you get into a record store, it's always, or mostly, fairly priced, and it's good categorizations, and it's good, I don't know, it just just feels better. I don't know why it is that way. Maybe it's a very, very long tradition. I haven't been to the UK, but I've heard from people who've been there digging a lot or living there that it's quite similar to the German market. And I think it's just a long tradition of DJs and music.
Yeah, and maybe love for music. I mean, I'm just thinking about it because I think somewhere Germany is like one of the third or fourth biggest music markets in itself. So maybe that's where it's coming from, that sort of like that tradition and that understanding. And like, you know, we're still, I mean, I think it's this year is the first year that like streaming overtook physical sales.
Yeah, exactly.
Like until...
I think Germany and the UK and those two countries have a very strong DJ tradition. So record stores have been there for a very long time and a lot of record stores everywhere. And then they can't be pickers choosers. They have to accept everyone because they have to make business. There are a lot of competition.
Yeah, and like just generally speaking, I think, you know, like we all have to be thankful for like the electronic music because they kept vinyl alive over the last years, you know. And there's a lot of spaces in Berlin especially where this always has been the case, and there are always been selling vinyl.
Yeah.
But you mentioned in the beginning that you spend a lot of time on tour with musicians. And in the beginning of the year, if you follow your Instagram account, you could see that you were on tour with Anna von Hauswolf. Yep. Do I say that right?
German name, so.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, I felt right familiar with it. How did that come about? Like the old connections from your teenagers where you've been touring? Or?
Well, I think Sweden, as you said, Sweden is a big country for music, but it's also very small. We're only 9 million people, and I can't tell you how many of us are.
You know every single one of them.
Exactly, I know everyone, but it's not even a big European city. So it's a small country, and I think the music industry is very centralized around the bigger cities. So when you live in a bigger city and you play with a band, you know almost everyone. It's kind of a small community. So I started touring when I was 16, 17 with different bands. And then, I don't know, you get to know a lot of people and you just... I don't know. It just happens, which sounds like the dumbest conclusion.
Like the coolest thing.
But you.
It sounds like all our, you know, hanging out, and you say, "Well, you want to come up tour?" And you say, "Yeah," and you just jump on the tour bus.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. And I've done tours with bands, both where I was playing, but mostly where I'm not playing, and like where we slept in the car, like the floor of the car. And I've done tours when we have fancy hotels and tour buses and everything. So it's all fun. I like living that way. I like the touring life because it's so out of my comfort zone. I have a tendency to be a hermit. I like to isolate myself. Oh, that's what my brain wants to do. It wants to be alone and not be around people. So it's a nice way to challenge myself.
To forcing yourself. Yeah.
Just be around people and. It's for a short while, but it's an intense time, and then you can be alone by yourself, and then you do it again.
And it justifies the alone time.
Yeah, kind of.
Because well, I've been around people now. I have the right to be a hermit right now, and listening to vinyl and going through my collection.
I feel like a lot of people who are into vinyl are also hermits.
Yeah, we
like that. Being at home.
I mean, it's not playing tennis or something. You know, you don't really need someone on the other side to do it, and you don't speak while the record is playing. Basically, you know, you don't need to. No. You know,
and everything's at home also. So,
and everything's at home. Yeah. While you're on tour, I mean, you've talked about the worst record store you've ever encountered. We don't want to name them, but...
No, that whole city. Maybe I one day will post something about it, but I feel like I'm...
In the foreword of your book about the stories of a record store.
Oh, I sound like a terrible person. But this whole city, it was the same climate all through the city. Maybe one day I will out this city. And people may be thinking now it's Paris because I spent a lot of time there in Paris. It's not Paris. It's not France. It's another country. But maybe I will tell at some point. But I feel like I'm too big of a count to, like, throw dirt at this small record store. Bad record stores. But we want to talk about
good record stores. Let's talk good record stores instead. Yeah. You know, when you're touring and through Europe, do you have any favorites outside of maybe, you know, Sweden and maybe Germany? Now we've covered that. That's like, you know, someone is maybe living in that city that's listening and says, oh, well, I've never been there, but, you know.
I think people have been to these records. I think through the last 2 years, I have two cities that stand out because before I'm going to talk about Germany now again, but before it used to be Berlin because I've been to Berlin so many times. So I've gotten to know that city and dig around. So I think it's just familiarity. But I was fortunate enough to be 2 days in Hamburg earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And that I fell in love with that city. I think a lot about that city since then.
And it's a you know, a musical capital with the Beatles and stuff. So
exactly.
Yeah, it has its history.
I just fell in love with the city in general. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's just my love for it. And everyone was so friendly everywhere. I've never been treated so well by everyone. But the record stores, there were so many record stores. I've never seen a city with so many record stores close to each other. And there I visited Groove City, was one of them, like a soul hip-hop oriented record store. And talking about female staff, there were only women working there. And they were super, super knowledgeable and very friendly, and the walls were all covered with signed records from different artists that's been there throughout the years. And they had it was so well decorated and well assorted, and everything was just, I love that store. I bought so many things. And then we visited another one, which was called Mini Groove in Hamburg, which we got recommended to us. And it was really small, like in it's not in a basement, but it was a floor.
A hole in the wall, basically.
Yeah, kind of. And you go downstairs and it's under a building, kind of. And it was super, it's super tiny, but it had records for like a massive store. So it was just piles, but it was well assorted. So it wasn't like that. But you, and I didn't have that much time, but it was just great selection and a fun selection. You saw things that you generally doesn't see a lot of times, and super, again, super friendly staff. It was kind of very close to Reeperbahn also, if anyone want to look it up. It was, I found some great records, some Star Wars records that I've been looking for some time. And the other city have to be Paris, which I was visiting for a week earlier this year. Also, just like Hamburg, super friendly staff everywhere. I wasn't badly treated or weirdly treated in any story. They were super nice and helpful and very knowledgeable and good genre dividers, placement, like super neat genres everywhere. And there, I think,
and not categorized for women only, or listening to.
No, not in France. Maybe in the small place, I don't know. But France was very similar to Germany, except in Germany, I feel like there's a lot of electro and synth and maybe hip hop, and a lot of interesting bootlegs that you can't find anywhere else. And in France, I feel there's a more direction towards African music, which is impossible to find in Sweden. Like, you can't.
Well, it's you know, it's understandable with their, you know, immigration.
Yeah, of course.
They probably bring a lot of it with it, you know, being coming from Africa.
And the records come with it. So you find things that you can't find anywhere else in Europe, I assume. Maybe in the southern of Europe, but not in the northern parts. Like, and they have a lot of hip hop there too. So, and a lot of, like, the thing I like about Germany and France digging there is they have a lot of techno, which is something I've gotten into the last couple of years. So I visited one called Heartbeat Vinyl, which was very, I say, niche towards like Japanese pressings and like very, very fancy pressings, and very fairly priced. So I got some Eno records there, Japanese pressings. And then my absolute favorite was Superfly Records, which is soul, jazz, Afro kind of section. I only looked through one section, and that was the Afrobeat, African section. And I spent, I think it was like 2 meters wide. So it wasn't that big, but I spent 3 hours just going through that section. And on every record, they had stickers. So they had listened to every record in that store, and it's a pretty big store. And on the sticker, it said what track they recommended and what kind of music it was. And they described the feeling of the music. So they didn't just write, this is high life. This is Ghanaian high life. They wrote the feeling of the music, like this is... now I'm just saying it was happy, but they described the feeling of the music, or like gave it a color, like it's vibrant red fusion. So you really got inspired to buy that record.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of money there. Superfly is my favorite. Groove City in Hamburg and Superfly in Paris may be my two favorite record stores in the whole world.
I've never been to both, and I'm right now sort of want to like book a trip there.
Yeah.
Because I find that the color thing that you just said so interesting, and like also the passion they must have for their stock, and like, you know, the involvement they must have for that.
Yeah, I was so impressed, because I work in a massive record store, but we won't have the opportunity to listen through it all, but. Yeah, the passion, the interest they must have for music, to listen through every record. And I felt like they don't sell the record they don't like. And the few records that they don't enjoy, you can tell by the sticker. Like, it's not, it's kind of okay.
Yeah,
but, you know.
It's not as, yeah, it's okay. It's okay. Like a gray. Yeah.
I've never really, like, I've vaguely scratched the surface of African music, which is huge. So it's really hard to know what countries you should focus on and what you should look into. And just going to that record store, I found out that my favorite genre probably is high life from Ghana. And since then, I've just been diving into that. And there's some high life from Nigeria also. That's really, really great. But that record
I've
store.
I've never heard of High Life.
Yeah.
So is there any artist that you would recommend to get into when you want to start with High Life?
I'm not going to slaughter those names by trying to say them. But maybe I should just make a playlist sometime. Maybe yeah. I just.
Or a post.
Yeah. I think.
Like an introduction to High Life.
And I know that record store is also on Instagram, Superfly. Instagram, so I know they can recommend things. But it's nice to, you know, finally, because Africa is such a huge continent, and where should you start? Myself living in Sweden, it's so
far away,
so distant. I don't have a natural source for someone to introduce me to what countries and influences I might like, and I found that there because I listened to so many records. I was there for such a long time, so then I figure out, maybe I don't like this, maybe I'm not into that kind of thing, maybe. And then just Ghana, Nigeria, that's my two countries.
It's generally such a well, I don't know, offend for someone, but like a blank space in like music history, basically. I think I'm now probably mistaken, but Ry Cooder did a lot of things with like African musicians, and like I know that I like the blues because a colleague where I once worked was really into Africa and stuff, but I've never even scratched the surface. I have been near the surface basically to even scratch it. But yeah, just you saying it, it's such a, you know, you always talk about America or England or Sweden or Scandinavia had a huge wave of bands like in the early 2000s and for indie. For me, Australia is right now, for me personally, like the country I'm discovering, mainly because they're doing like interesting guitar music, like, you know, and mostly women, basically, like women doing guitar music better than ever.
Yeah.
But Africa, I've never really, you know, and that's such an interesting, I'm definitely going to put this up there. High
Life. And it's in High Life. Yeah, it's really, it will make you very happy to listen to. But I just think it says a lot about us as Europeans or a country that we are, this is a blank space. And I feel we have blank space within our continent also. I had a period in high school where I was super into Balkan music from the Balkan region, like Bosnia and Croatia, and that led me into Romani music and the movies like Emir Kusturica, Black Cat, White Cat, and things like that. And then I dug into that, and that is also a genre that we don't know a lot about, and that's just massive.
Yeah, again, blank space for me. I have to
cowardly
admit
that. Yeah,
exactly.
And that's so close
to us. Yeah.
And we don't,
But then again, maybe it's also comforting because there's so much to discover. I find that interesting. I mean, sometimes people are like, oh, it's so confusing and so much. But I find like, okay, great. There are still things that you can, you know, like the next wormhole you can get into and like discovering things. And I find it really interesting and comforting right now that there's so much blank space still.
Yeah, and you will never be able to discover everything, but that's the great thing about record stores. That's the great thing about Superfly in this case, that I was able to go into that store and they helped me I never talked to the staff, but they helped me figure out where to start in a whole continent.
Yeah, and they already curated it, you know, sort of by their stock. Yeah,
that person who wrote those notes maybe have been listening to this different genres for like 40 years and just focusing on those countries in Africa and figure out what they are and what they usually do and things like that. And then I can just come in and just read those notes and figure out what direction I want to start in. And that's,
yeah, and you say that's not
amazing.
A vibrant red, that's more like green.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking for something.
Yeah,
calming.
I was looking for something blue. Do you have something, not the Joni Mitchell record, like that feels blue? Yeah,
exactly. And that's the great thing about you can never get that from the internet, because internet will it's just not the same. I'm
mostly they
like,
copy like the you know the label releases and they sort of just put it down and it's like, well, take it.
Yeah, and those really really passionate people who have been listening to a genre for 40 or not a genre but listening to a certain type of techno for 40 years, those people won't appear on the internet. They will own a record store and they will work there and they will know, they will they are the person where you can come up to the register and say, oh, I want something that's ambient but also blue. And they will know.
Yeah, and they'd say, well, there are about six different options. Where will we start?
Yeah. And then you say, but I don't like this type of thing, and I don't like that type of drum machine program thing. And then
And they say, okay, now we have three options left. Should I show them to you? Yeah.
Yeah. And that's my job also. So I know exactly what they mean. But it's amazing. That's why I love record stores.
Well, you're spending so much time in record store this year. Have you any, like, the three favorite records this year? Like, not in the perfect order, but, like, just, like... I mean, I know John Hopkins probably maybe is up there. Yeah,
it's probably going to be up there. I have so many. I can't narrow... Maybe I should mention
maybe 10.
Some...
That's okay.
Maybe 10. Okay, we have the time. But I can mention some records that I feel like not a lot of people maybe
know about
because they are the big ones. And I don't think they need any more exposure. Domino has had one of their strongest years ever. Yeah. It's been a weird year for Domino Records. And I still haven't tried to figure out how they got Cat Power to move from Matador to Domino Records, because she released her new record on Domino Records also, but they seem to be the greatest label on earth. And just to connect with John Hopkins again, that he released his record there also. But that's,
and it's such a diversity group, you know, such a different group of people and styles, and I love it. But it's all, you know, it's all good. That's probably where it's like coming together.
From when you look at it from behind the scenes, if you can call it that, by working in a record store and working with musicians, it just tells you that they have great respect and for their artists. Like, they treat their artists really, really good, apparently, since they have so many great records and
and probably a lot of freedom involved, you know. I think all these artists probably I mean I don't know Cat Power, but from, you know, the years, I think she treasures a lot of freedom, and I think maybe that's like sort of, you know, I remember, like, you know, Arctic Monkeys, the beginning of their career, they choose Domino over like all major labels they could have, you know, have. And I think they just did it because the people at it were not just about sympathy, but, you know, just probably most interest in music, really.
Mm. Yeah. It seems like a label with a lot of passionate people. And I've been in awe about their releases this year. It's been an amazing year for Domino Records. And it sounds like I'm sponsored, but I'm not sponsored. I just like it when you can see a label that I just love labels. I just love falling in love with labels and discovering music via labels. So that label has been standout. And then one of my favorite artists of all time is Gregory Alan Isakov. He's originally from South Africa. He's living in the States now, and he makes folk music and I don't know, folk singer songwriter. I hate saying that genre, but it is what it is. But I feel, I heard someone when I played this record, he said that it's all. He said it's producer porn to listen to the new record, because
definitely I don't know, I mean, I love him as well, and he has some kind of special microphone, I think, which he's like recording his voice. I just love the sound of his voice. It's like the most beautiful thing.
I just got goosebumps just talking about it, because I just keep remembering everything. But I know their last two records are just analog recorded on tape, so that's one thing. And I think he has his studio at home, and he lives on a farm, and everything feels so organic. And I'm not saying that it's something that I prefer, but when everything just feels so real, so organic, like flowing and just so palpable in a way, I just love it. And I saw him live for the first time last year, and it was the exact same feeling live. It was just, I don't know, it just feels real in a way I can't describe. And it's producer porn. It's so well produced. It's not boring.
No, it has a sort of, I think I've always called it warmth around it. And it's sort of, I think not the last, but like the one before that, I used it on traveling. And it's such a great traveling record as well. I mean, it's like the best soundtrack for like looking out, you know, the window of a train or something. As well as just staying home and thinking about it. But it's such a great... I don't know, it just grounds you, and it's just beautiful. I completely agree with you there.
And he's an amazing songwriter, and he's an amazing singer. He has an impeccable voice.
Yeah, and it's so effortless. That's probably the most. It's like
people who feels like they were born to sing, like they just woke up with. Which I know isn't the case. He has been working very, very hard on his voice, and everyone who is a good singer works very hard on their vocal performance. But it just feels like he was born to do this. It just feels so natural, and I can really recommend. There is a podcast just search his name. It pops up. So where they do a really in-depth interview with him about his whole life and process of recording and his relationship with music, which is really relaxed and not at all schooled in any way. It really feels like he was just born to make music. So that's he as a person and his music just speaks to me. So I think that one. And then the third one, who is a newcomer and is definitely an indie artist in its true form, because that record, you can only get it through him and that label, is Novo Amor from Wales. He often get accused of just sounding like Bon Iver. But I think Bon Iver only sounded like that for one record, which was their self-titled. So before that and after that, Bon Iver didn't sound like that, because they are always is always evolving. He just makes different things. So it has elements of that self-titled Bon Iver record. But I would argue that a lot of things in today's music scene sounds a lot like that record, because it was so influential. So it's kind of like Kanye West 808s and Heartbreaks. After that record was released, it influenced just a massive amount of hip-hop and R&B. And just like Bon Iver's Bon Iver, it just influenced a massive amount of like this floating, ethereal pop, indie pop.
Yeah, and he's always been really great with, you know, the first record was like this folk record, really, you know, nothing else around it in a time where that was, you know, like with Fleet Foxes and stuff. And then this third record is like this... I still, you know, I don't have words to describe it really, but it's just beautiful, and there like textures all around it.
It's things happening all the time in that record, and it feels like it's really polarizing. Also, people either hate it or love it. I love it. I think it's beautiful, and I don't mind that he used a lot of auto-tune. It doesn't bother me. I think he uses it in very tasteful ways, and he uses it as an instrument.
Yeah, and just on a sound, you know, soundscape sort of, and he's just like, you know, putting different colors at different, and just like sometimes it's like just a little point there, but it has like an impact on the whole thing. I think to me, you know, it sounds like that.
Yeah, but now I'm sidetracked out to Bon Iver.
Oh, sorry.
No, I did, but Novo Amor. It's kind of that very floating ethereal, and he has a falsetto voice that is really beautiful. And he had done an album, a collaboration before that with a guy named Ed Tollett, who is also from the UK, who does similar music. But this is his debut album. I think it was released last week, which would be mid-October. And it's really beautiful. I haven't received it on vinyl yet, but I think it's an... hand pour, so it will be different every copy, which is interesting, always for a collector like myself. It will be interesting both in knowing how it will sound quality wise and nice to own something that no one else owns. Everything is unique. But that's my three, maybe not so well known, but there are a lot of things, and there are still a couple of months left, 2 months left worth of records. So, but the December usually is just Christmas records and really
shitty music. Shots. Yeah, going into the market. Yeah, but like you said, something that no one else has. Yes, like I don't remember. You have like a record that's like one of 27, one of 36.
But it's not really that special of a record.
it's a really small run of
it's not
of pressings.
The thing is, you when you work in a record store or you work in the record industry, you start to get really, really cynical. So you know what people are doing when they do this kind of, it's only 36 records. Yeah, you had a couple of records left from the pressing plant that you didn't know what to do with. That's the thing. I bought it at a show with one of my favorite artists of once again, all time, Daniel Norgren, who is a Swedish guy with a guitar. But he is just amazing. And I saw him live in February, I think. And at the show, they sold a limited run of my favorite album of his, Alabercy, 36 copies. And it was just the record in a paper sleeve signed, and it came with an exclusive poster. But I know that they probably had copies left without the sleeve, so that's probably what happened. And then they had posters left from the box set, probably. And then they just threw it together and sold it as a limited edition. So we are 36 people who have that record.
That left over.
But it's still overpriced at Discogs, so it doesn't matter. But you get a little bit cynical. I had to have it because I love that record and it was really cheap, so I just wanted it. But I mean, that's not my most valuable or special record in any way.
Valuable, it's the kind of, you know, terms of price or terms of like emotional value. But what is it when you're mentioning it?
I'm really terrible at having
overview.
I'm really terrible at it. I just realized two of my most valuable records. I had no idea that they were valuable at all. Like a 7-inch from Radiohead with the song Spectre on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not valuable. It's not the most valuable. Speaking of money, of all my records, but for being a 7-inch, I think it was like $90. And I was like, it's a 7-inch. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Why? So that's for the amount.
And it didn't even make the cut for the James Bond track that it was like intended
to.
It's
really poor, like cardboard paper. It's not in it doesn't even have an inner sleeve.
Yeah. But that's Radiohead.
It's Radiohead. And it was like 2,000 copies. I don't get it. But it's for the amount of plastic used, it's probably my most valuable record. But other than that, I have one record that I really love that I own. There's only 200 copies, and that is Robin Body Talk, which was released in 2010, I think. And that's only had a run of one run of black vinyl, 200 copies. And I bought it for, I think, around €9 from someone who had reviewed it and didn't like it, and the person hadn't even opened it, so I just bought it for €9 when it was released, and now it just goes for insane amount of money. But I think it will be repressed soon. Robin has hinted about it, but that's probably my most treasured record. And then I have a really weird record that's made out of metal from the 50s, I think. And that was from a recording booth in Stockholm at an amusement park. They had this recording booth where you record yourself and then you get a record of that.
Oh, like Neil Young record that he did like in this recording booth. I think there was like a couple of years ago. Yeah.
And Third Man Record had one of those.
Exactly, yeah. I think he did that recording at Third Man Record.
Yeah. And that kind of thing, but in the 50s.
And they pressed it on metal?
Yeah, it's in metal. I can't tell you what metal because I'm terrible
at it.
Okay. But I assume some kind of aluminum based metal. And I haven't been able to listen to it because it's in metal and I don't have a player for it. But one day I will listen to it. And it just
says it's like someone's personal, like, you don't even know what's on it.
No. I don't know what song it's like they're
someone,
singing.
Yeah, or saying happy birthday to their mother or something.
Maybe. I got it because the person who started Bengans, the store I work at, Bengans, he sold the company in early 2000 to my bosses now. But he came back to work at the store and he used to do the secondhand section. And then that record just appeared and he just said, you want it? Don't know what to do with it. And of course I want it because I love weird records. I love that unique piece of history. And now I'm just looking for something to play it on. I have no idea how to play it.
But that's amazing. I just remember that some band, I don't remember if it's a good band, but they sort of did like a special edition for like a record on ice where you could they give you like a template and then you could like pour water in it and put it in the freezer and then there would be the record on ice. That's just one other. Otherwise, I never heard of a record on metal.
No, I googled it. There is a Wikipedia page for that kind of records, but I couldn't find a non-Swedish page, because the Swedish, I found a Swedish page for this kind of thing because it was a big thing in Stockholm at the time, 40s, 50s, where they come in and do these records. But I couldn't find a English website where I could read about this kind of thing. But I read a little bit about the Swedish tradition of amusement parks and recording short records. But I don't know when it ended, and I don't know how to play it.
But like talking about like the things you're looking for, or special editions, or Star Wars, what you mentioned, and you found in Hamburg, was that the Star Wars record? Yeah. Following your account, you just, is this Zeus vinyl? She just got you like a record you've still been looking for, and that's, I'm probably gonna butcher that name as well. Gonya Zufi.
Yeah, from Los Angeles, or at least that's where he is based.
Firstly, I looked it up and I really enjoyed it. That's one point. But are there any other records that you really, that are sort of at large that you're looking for, and that maybe someone's listening and have it like in their collection and saying, well, I don't, never listen to it, I don't want it? Or do you want to like really discover it in a store and it's like, no, don't send it to me?
I am a store person. I really love the hunt. I've never bought anything secondhand from anyone online. I just bought from people who I've met. But there are a couple of records. Some of them are not rare, but they only appear in America, so I, or the US, so I can never get them.
Until you get there.
Until I get there. But I've been obsessed with a record for, I think, for a year that I'm not going to find. I shouldn't say, but I tried to order a bootleg, but it never appeared. So it never arrived. I don't know. But it's a Canadian guy. I know a lot of people will know this, but Mort Garçon. And he made...
I'm not one of the people.
You know, but he made a record with Moog synthesizers. For I think in the 60s, maybe. Yeah. I'm messing this up. Maybe it was the 70s, but it has to be the 70s. Oh, anyway, so he made a record with Moog synthesizer for plants. So it's like ambient music for plants that will make them grow faster, and it's so soothing to listen to. I just love it, and it's super expensive, and it's really hard to find a good copy, and they haven't done a reissue, and it looks like no one will ever do a reissue because the rights and everything. And there is a bootleg. There is kind of not a bootleg. That it's this gray zone of public. It's that gray zone. But everyone who has bought it says that it's missing sounds and it sounds terrible and it has no. It's really flat and everything. So you really want a first pressing of that record. And there is this guy who owns who works at a record store in Los Angeles, who have DM'd me several times saying, "Oh, now we have it in stock, but I just can't pay like $200 for a record. I can't justify that for myself."
Yeah, and then maybe it's, you know, it is the one that's sounding flat, or it's like missing pieces or something.
Yeah, but it seems to appear in, he's from Canada, this musician, and it seems to appear in Canada the US quite often, and I read a lot of stories of people just finding it in like yard sale for $5. But as soon as it arrives at a record store, everyone knows how valuable it is. It's called Mother Earth's Plantasia, and it's just if you like synthesizers, which I do a lot, it's like synthesized porn for plants. I don't know.
And
I
people,
just, you know. People, people. It's only available on YouTube also, so it's not available digital. Someone has ripped it from a vinyl.
But that's beautiful. That's actually not really, you know, only on vinyl.
And then so I can listen to it at times before it's taken down, because it's taken down several times.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing with Midori Takada, who is a Japanese ambient musician. But they reissued her most famous record earlier this year, so maybe there's hope. But that was also like only on YouTube, available on YouTube. Yeah, that's probably the record I'm looking for. But then there's a band called Electric President, who makes electronic pop, electropop.
Yeah.
And they made an album with their, it's self-titled. I have all of their albums except for their self-titled.
That's a collector's nightmare.
Yeah, and that's really expensive and also only appears in America for some reason. Even if it was pressed by a German label, it never appears in anywhere close to me. And I never buy from Discogs. So if anyone ever sees it in Europe, in a European record store, just tell me and I will go there. I will fly there to buy that record. That's probably, and I always try to complete my Elliot Smith collection. I have a couple of 7 inches that I'm missing.
Which one are you missing?
Of Elliot Smith?
Yeah.
Oh, I have just raged them on Discogs because I can never remember what.
Is it early stuff or really
no,
early stuff?
No, I have most of them. There's a couple of them who are very expensive, but I never remember the name. I just get emails from Discogs saying, no, it's available, but it's always super highly priced. Yeah, it's mostly in new stuff. It's Son of Sam. I don't have that one.
Oh, okay.
Happiness. I don't have that one. And Baby Britain, I don't have. But the other ones I have. So I have, they are not super expensive either. They're like, 10 euros or something around that.
Yeah, but it's Discogs. I mean, you should probably want to find it in a store somewhere.
Yeah, I've been told several times that I should just get into Discogs and buy things from people secondhand. And for me, it's 50% of the thing is to find it in a store or find it from a person that you meet. I bought a record from my colleague or my friend, rather, just the other day. And that gives, I don't know, I like that so much more, talking to the person who owned it and buying it that way.
Yeah, and it's a history, and it's still, again, an organic feeling around like having a story and not just, well, I pressed on that button and then it magically appeared on my doorstep and then I paid via PayPal and then...
Yeah, I order stuff online, like limited editions and things, things.
Yeah,
but I never buy secondhand because I don't know. I like to hold the record and looking at it and knowing the quality and knowing the history. Also, I have to admit, I just like talking to people about records. So I will take the opportunity to talk to the person about the record. It's nice. I bought this record from him because he didn't like it. So, he didn't want to talk about it. But
well, it's also a conversation saying that, but I want to take it.
Yeah. Oh, he never listened to it. So that's the problem.
But we mentioned Bon Iver, and you, in one of your QAs, you showed a Bon Iver record. Well, the self-titled, actually, I think, if I remember right, that's signed with Eyeliner. And you said that's a story for another time. Is it another time?
I don't think it's a good story, because it's one of those stories where I remember it and I feel so embarrassed for some reason. I just cringe at myself. I don't remember, but it was when the self-titled album was released. It was in connection to that. And I was on tour with Anna and her band at the time. I wasn't playing anything. Bon Iver and we shared the backstage area. So Bon Iver played it was Anna von Hauswolf, and then it was Wilco after that, and then Bon Iver on that same stage.
That's an awesome lineup, by the way.
I think that was a three. Yeah, it was a three bands, and I think I just bought the record for some reason, so I had it with me. I think I even bought it at this festival we were at. But I can't remember. And then I got backstage and I was like, this never happens because I never get starstruck, which sounds like I'm bragging, but I'm not. It's just like you get a little bit immune towards it after being on touring since you were 16 or 17. You meet so many musicians. But I got in there and I panicked. I was like, I will never meet these guys again. I will never meet them again. There would be no scenario where I would meet Bon Iver ever again. So I just asked them to sign it, and I only had my eyeliner with me. So they signed it with, instead of their names, they have just painted things inside it, and it's completely smushed. It's like, so someone painted a flower. I think the only one who signed it properly was Sean Carey, the drummer, and the other people just painted things with my eyeliner. And now when I'm telling it, I think it's not that of a cringy story, but for some reason I just feel embarrassed that I asked them for a sign, because I think it's the only time I've asked for to get something signed.
And it's not even prominent. I mean, it's, you know, that when it's smushy and stuff, it's like...
Yeah, I'm never going to sell it, but I will always remember it. There's eyeliner all over the... I think it's signed on the inner sleeve. No, it's signed on the back side of the record. And the plastic sleeve has eyeliner on it. And the I never sell any records. I've never sold a record that I own. I just have this vision that one day I will just put it on my future kids to take care of it. And maybe they will have something. Maybe they will enjoy it, this eyeliner smushed record.
And the story behind it.
Yeah, and the very cringy story behind it.
I don't think it's cringy. I really don't. I don't know. Mean, that's always easy to tell from the other side, really. I think it could be that they remember it, you know, that eyeliner story, back yeah. Which isn't helping you probably with the cringy aspect of it.
But the thing is, I only think it's cringy because I know when... No, I don't. I always... This is just general in life. I don't want to bother people. And that's my problem, that I always feel like I'm bothering people with my presence. And you don't. I've been on that position myself where people come up and say hi, and I never feel like they bother me. I'm always happy that they do. But in retrospective, I feel like, yeah, but they were on tour and maybe they wanted to relax and have a good time and not be bothered by this, like, 20-year-old bothering them with the... a stupid record. Yeah,
but maybe if it's helping, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to help. It's probably just, you know, what's been such a big thing because it's so special to you. It's probably 5 minutes out of their day on a stressful day.
Exactly. Yeah, I just can't put it in. I always feel like I'm bothering other people, but I never feel like people bother me. So I just need to get in that mindset that, well, it's the same thing for other people. And if people don't want to be bothered, it's not like I went to the dressing room and went inside and bothered them.
Yeah, and sat down on the couch and said, well, what are we going
to
drink?
No. We were standing in a group of people. They were just about to go on stage. No, not just about. It was like I harassing them. We were just standing there. We all had been playing some kind of Swedish stupid silly game with bricks. And then I just asked, can I have it signed? I only have eyeliner. So it wasn't like I was intruding on their privacy.
It sounds fine to me. It really sounds fine.
It's one of many dumb tour stories.
No, really. But I know exactly what you're feeling. And I've talked to like musicians. I've only talked to like 3 or something. And it was like always like, yeah. I regretted it instantly afterwards. But I think it was... fine, actually. But what you mentioned, when people like approach you, I mean, with like these 40,000 followers and especially spending your time in record stores, so being surrounded by people that listen to music, and how often does it appear that someone's saying, oh, aren't you the person I'm following on Instagram?
It's a very small percentage of people who are following that comes from Sweden, so it's mostly tourists who come up.
But does happen.
Yeah, it does happen. It happens more, of course, when I'm visible at the store. I'm mostly at my office. So when I'm visible, like when I work weekends, I think it's like 3 or 4 times a day. Or if I'm standing at the counter at the store. But otherwise, maybe once or twice a week, people come up and say hi. It's more when we are on tour. Then people approach me quite often, and it's very nice. I'm feeling very honored that people want to talk to me.
Yeah, I think it's the thing you do on Instagram, which is, you know, apart from the other stuff, that turning yourself in, I mean, it's fascinating. It's really fascinating. I assume it takes a lot of time. And like planning and just coming up with the idea of like, oh, I've seen that Pink Floyd cover a lot of times, but I've never thought about, you know, extending that line and putting it, you know, on my face, or that Pulp Fiction cover or something. It's like really fascinating. Yeah. Is there like a moment where you like decided, oh, I can do that. I can turn myself into a record. I should do that. That's something in me that wants to get out.
I've been taking self-portraits that aren't self-portraits, where I've been dressing up since I was in high school. Yes, I studied photography in high school, and then I took other, I've been working as a photographer on and off, and I also studied photography after high school. So I always been fascinated by the self-portrait, not the selfie,
yeah,
but using yourself.
The grown-up version of it, sort of.
Yeah, maybe so. But my all-time favorite artist is Cindy Sherman, who does self-portrait, and she was did a lot of things in the 80s and 70s, and where she dressed up to different characters, where to the point where she's not recognizable, and she puts herself out in the street or at home or anything, and she makes these really elaborate costumes and turns herself into other characters. And I was introduced to that by my photography teacher in high school. And I spent a lot of time, and then I just did analog photography. So that's also a challenge, taking self-portraits with analog photography equipment and then developing it. And I think that just that is something that I'm, when it comes to myself, I'm an intense control freak with my own things. Like, not, I don't need control from other people, but when it comes to my own artwork, if you will, or things like that, I want full control. And that means that using myself as a model is the most convenient thing, because I know what I want from myself. I know the positions and everything. I know I have the idea in my head. So the only thing I have to do is make that. So that way of thinking was natural to me before I started the Instagram account.
And it's great to combining it with, you know, music then and vinyl.
Yeah, exactly. So those two are my two big passions, art and music, I think.
And then this artist that's, you know, sort of like an inspiration in that case. For like the form.
Yeah, and I think she was a pioneer in that art form. And after that, many people have done the same thing. But I just like that way of... I personally like to do everything. I like the process of all the things in creating the picture and doing the makeup and then editing it and writing about the music. I just love everything about it.
And you know, probably sharing it and getting the reaction. Not like in a, oh, look at me, it's great thing, but just the exchange with like people.
Of course.
I think that's the beauty of like also this Instagram thing, if you want to say it that like. But how much time does it take? Like, from like getting the idea, it's like Broken Records to helping that you, or do you go into your own collection and look like what you can, or do you get something in your hand and say, oh, I can turn myself into that?
It's combination of both. There are some pictures that I'm constantly planning, but I can't execute because I don't have the money, because I'm not a millionaire. You don't make a lot of money working in a record.
I think every vinyl collector isn't a millionaire. I think that's sort of, that's like a, it crosses each other out.
No. Yeah, exactly. So and time. So I have a couple of ideas that are super ambitious that I just have to wait for both money, time, and also experience, because some things I just can't execute. I've been throwing ideas. I've have like 3 body paints that I've completed and taken the picture, and then just it's just so terrible. I can't post it. And there are body paints where I have to redo them a couple of times just so I can get kind of what I want to, because I'm not experienced, so I don't know what I'm doing.
It doesn't look like it, you know, like the John Hopkins or the Bonobo, I think, where people like accused you of like photoshopping.
Yeah, they do all the time. And those the John Hopkins, that one, I just went for it. And it's pretty simple. Also, it's just a sunset, so it's pretty...
Yeah, but like the well, how do you say, the hue or whatever, it's going from like a sunset, the beauty of like the colors in it. And it's like, I mean, maybe it's close up, it's not as, you know, but like from that angle of the photograph, it's beautiful. And it made me like even more discover that artist in a way. It's such a strange thing, really.
And for me, my strengths are color. And when it comes to just the paint, it's color and blending. Those are my strengths. And I'm not very good at the details. And I'm not very good at, like, I can do a landscape, but I couldn't paint a person. I'm terrible at painting faces and things like that. So that won't happen. But the Bonobo painting I had to try out to see how colors blend and how that thing worked out. But... I don't know. I think it's 50-50. Some posts are planned. Some posts are planned like months. I have the idea and then I just have to figure out how to do it. And some posts I do the same day. I just see the record in my shelf and I'm like, I'm going to do that one today. And it's a mix of both, I think.
And time-wise, what's the longest that ever took you to do one? Like, it's hours. I mean, you can see that on the paint job, but like...
Yeah, the execution itself is always hours. And then people always say, oh, you have too much free time, but they don't realize that I love doing this.
Yeah, you make time. That's probably the difference between, you know...
This is my kind of my passion. Besides making and listening to music, this is... I've said before, I'm a little bit of a hermit, so I enjoy this. I just enjoy being by myself and doing these kinds of things. But I say the one that maybe took the most time has to be the Star Wars post, where I made a Rey costume, because I made the whole costume.
Sure, as you do.
So that, yeah, as you do. But I like to sew things also, but I'm a terrible seamstress, but I like it. So it's a hack job, but anyway, I made that costume.
And again, it doesn't look like it. It looks
if you saw me, I couldn't go to a Halloween party in that costume. It would look horrible. But you know, in a picture, it looks great. I'm going to do another picture today. That's the exact same thing. Hopefully, it will work out. But I'm not going to say what it is because if it doesn't work out, I don't want anyone to know that I failed terrible. But it's going to look terrible in person, but on picture it will look absolutely amazing, hopefully.
Do you have your own personal favorite, or is it the next one that's the favorite?
No, of my own posts, you mean?
Yeah, do you have like of your own post that you like can still look at and say, oh, that's exactly, it turned exactly out how I wanted it to be?
I think the ones where I surprise, like when I go in blind and just hope for the best. Those are always the one that I like the most. So
that sort of start at the day and you end it on the day, and it's like, oh well, that worked actually.
Today is going to be one of those days where I'm like, I have no idea. I'm going to try to apply like a bald cap for the first time, like glue it to my face, and that's a challenge in its own right.
And dangerous,
but I have safe glue. Okay. It's not a problem. But I think. Maybe the first time I really took that leap of faith and did something completely out of my comfort zone has to be the John Hopkins singularity post, because I never painted on my body before. So I just went for it. I just went out and buy some colors and then I just went for it. So that was like very satisfying to myself, knowing that I could do that. And I have to say, I don't think anyone has done it before in the vinyl community, where they body painted themselves. So it was a fun thing. Now a lot of people use body paint, but at the time, no one made themselves into. I know a girl who painted record sleeves on her face, and she doesn't do it any longer. But she painted like Joy Division's Unknown Pressures and everything, like super detailed on her face, but it wasn't vinyl related. So
yeah, but that's the sort of the genre I talked about in like the introduction. Yeah. You know, it is something. And when I see someone using body paint, I think about, oh, that's like my Arnold, you know, I mean, you know, it's like a record, like, and someone says, oh well, that sounds like Bowie. I mean, you know, in comparison, obviously, but it is something that's never been done before, and that's sort of it brought like a baseline, and it's sort of, you know, and you think, oh, they obviously, I know where this comes from, they looked at, you know. Yeah. and that's fascinating in itself, I think, and amazing.
Yeah, it's they say imitation is the finest form of flattery, and it really is. It's really nice to see that people are getting inspired to do things like the themed post I have, and they do the same thing with the decade posts. And I'm not saying people haven't done lists of decades before, but when they dress up and they do color themed playlists and they do body paints and they everything, and people have done dressed up as covers before, it's not that, but I'm just saying it feels like I'm at least inspiring some people to get out of their comfort zone like I do and do different things, and of course other accounts are inspiring in that same way. And I think Bonobo Black Sands is just a piece where it turned out better than I expected. I didn't know I could paint that well. I'm not saying it's an expert job, but it's better than I thought I could paint. So I think those two and Moby play.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
It was fun to do.
I think there are people that are coming to me and saying, were you in this Instagram world? Have you seen that person doing that? That definitely happened in my life.
So I think those three, and those are also three records I love. So maybe it's that also.
Yeah, and it's great, I think, seeing inspiring and people getting out of comfort zones and just, you know, giving themselves a try and like discovering things they maybe never knew they liked or they enjoyed. And I feel like in comparison, even though I think maybe it's like just having such a big following, I still feel like that the vinyl community on Instagram is really supporting and nice and welcoming. That's what I experience it like, with, you know, some exceptions obviously, but like in the whole general it's really open and welcoming.
And it's improved, I would say, for the last year or so. I think it's a lot better now than it used to be. It used to be really exclusive for a certain type of people, and now it's really inclusive. And I don't know why it's become that way. Maybe it's because there's more people, or maybe it's because Instagram changed their algorithm. So my post doesn't appear on people's pages who doesn't want to see me.
Well, that's not really inclusive, but
no, yeah, but I feel like, at least for me, but I can't speak for everyone, and I don't keep track on other people's accounts how much hate they get, but the amount of hate I get now compared to a year ago is just it's nothing. It's barely anything. Knock on wood, but it's decreased intensely over the last year.
Then let's hope that's a development or a progress that's going in that direction.
And I think it has a lot to do with the algorithm. Just my post doesn't appear on pages where people generally don't like that type of content.
Yeah, and they cater to it that, okay, you didn't like this, we're not going to show you this. Yeah, but generally, I hope that's a progress that's keeping itself in that direction. Thank you so much for doing this and for being so brave to being the first one in this
thank
series.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for being brave enough to put me first.
Thank you.